If I were to ask you to show me a book, if you were to take me somewhere, where would we go to find a book of practical ethics? Would we head towards the bookstore? Hey, Walmart's usually got a good deal. That's what I hear. I heard the internet mentioned earlier. Maybe we could hit the internet and see where we might find this book of practical ethics that might lead us in this world. What two things could we use the most in reality in life? Practicality. This is a complicated world, isn't it? And it's also a world that you and I as Christians really need to think about the ethical approach to our lives. What will we do? How do we do it? Where do we turn? This book is also known as a practical book, a absolute guide to success, a guide that young people should put some great attention to as they begin to prepare their lives, their vocation, who they might marry, where they might live. Are they going to have children? What's my idea about money? Where am I going to go? All of those things. If I were to suggest to you, too, that this is also a book that's called a book of wisdom. Do you know where we might go? Most of you have a book sitting on your lap that we can turn to. But within that book, there's a specific book that talks about that practical, ethical way of life and talks about wisdom. Anyone have an idea? Very good. Boy, we're gonna give him an A. He gets to get an extra cookie after. Okay? Okay. Absolutely correct. It's part of the wisdom literature in Scripture. There are three books that usually lend themselves to that aspect of wisdom. And that is Job's, Ecclesiastes, and Proverbs. Well, we'll just limit it to Job, okay? But when they were looking at the different books of the Bible, at least some Bible scholars went ahead and identified these particular three books and said they are very helpful for those of us who are seeking wisdom. And obviously, that's something you and I certainly need in this world to make the decisions that we need. It's as though we're appraisers. We're making decisions all the time. Now, an appraisal, if you look at that definition, is just simply one of an educated opinion. So all of us are going to need that type of education. I would like to share with you some practical wisdom out of the book. It doesn't come from me, has nothing to do with me. We're going to turn to Proverbs. But I would like to read from the Jewish Study Bible, which I think lend some flavor to the Proverbs today. And I don't know that we're going to finish the book. Don't be too concerned. I realize there are 31 chapters, and you might be getting a little nervous. Oh, man, this is going to be 2 hours. I promise it won't be at all. There's always the opportunity for part two. So we know the snacks await. I understand. Bill's getting another cookie. He's in a hurry. I understand. So we're going to read about wisdom literature real quick, where it says, according to most biblical scholars, the three books of Job, Proverbs, and Ecclesiastes should be viewed together as wisdom literature. Wisdom literature describes works that do not focus on the nation Israel or on its great formative historical memories, such as the Exodus and conquest, on the temple and Jerusalem, and or the covenant as the central theological notion, binding together God, the people of Israel, and the land of Israel. Wisdom books are thus in some ways a departure from the concerns of the other biblical books. They share rather as their focus reflection on universal human concerns, especially the understanding of individual experiences and the maintenance of ordered relationships. The maintenance of ordered relationships that lead both to success on the human plane and to divine approval. Now, I find this fascinating. When you think about the book of Proverbs, it's addressing our relationship with God and other people and the things that we do from this writer's point of view, as a human, rather. In other words, it's not divinely being shared with us in the sense that when you look at the Torah and the Pentateuch possibly being one and the same, and you look at Moses, and he was writing God's law as it was prescribed to him, as it was given to him, as he was told to write it down, you might say. Now, Solomon here in Proverbs, of course, there are those that might argue authorship, but that's not my point today, is looking at his humanity, and he's describing through that part of his life where he has gotten this wisdom, where he has achieved some gray hair. He has some view, and he's looking back to an extent, and he's able to share with all of us from that point of wisdom, and we know that he is one of the most wise. All you need to do is think about many of the things that he has shared with us. And it is said that the Songs of Solomon were a time when in his youth, and you can read the book and understand, he was a young guy writing this. He had certain views at that time. Proverbs is when he has that maturity that we just discussed, and Ecclesiastes is looking back at times where he might, in a sarcastic way, share with us some of his points of view. I guess that's why I like Ecclesiastes. I tend to be somewhat sarcastic at times about, is that all there is? And in some ways, that's what Solomon shares with us in that particular book. But today, I want us to look at Proverbs, if you would. If we were to turn to Ecclesiastes 7 before we begin, and again, I'm going to read solely from the Jewish Study Bible today, okay? If you would permit me to do so, and I don't have another book up here, so I hope you do. But in Ecclesiastes 7, it discusses practical wisdom. And again, in this world, this complicated world of ours, eliminating some of those difficulties, those stresses of life, is a great achievement. And you and I as Christians need to understand wisdom. We need to define it. We need to understand how it influences our life. In Ecclesiastes 7 and verses 11 and 12, the Jewish Study Bible states it this way. It says, wisdom is as good as patrimony. Now, I had to fess up. I didn't know what patrimony was, so I looked it up. It just simply means inheritance. Okay? In other words, wisdom is as good as anything you might inherit. When you think about wisdom in actuality, it's something that you've got to do something about too, doesn't it? It requires some effort. You've got to study. You've got to do all those things. And that's why the first message was so beneficial. When the first message discusses how you might go about learning and putting these things down and understanding that they might lend to creating wisdom as you Bible study, it certainly points itself towards Proverbs. It says, wisdom is as good as patrimony and even better. It's even better. For those who behold the sun. Now, it's talking about being under the sun. In other words, you're alive. You feel the differences in your life. For to be sheltered of wisdom is to also be sheltered of money. Now, the New King James would render shelter. For to be in the defense of wisdom is to be also in the defense of money. Well, think about it. When the water heater goes out or your transmission in your car, that rainy day fund's a big deal. In other words, money in that sense does help you out. But even greater is the point of wisdom of understanding the needs that you have physically that will then transfer and understand the spiritual aspects of your physicality. So that's the shelter that you receive from wisdom. And the advantage of intelligence is that wisdom preserves the life of him who possesses it. Wisdom preserves the life of someone who is wise. And I can tell you, I'm sure you would agree, that there are those times when you really need to have some answers. And those answers can be found in the book. Certainly we require both physical and spiritual wisdom. There's no doubt. Now, I realize that there's going to be some reading today, and I hope that you would bear with me. And I know sometimes that's hard to just sit and watch me read to you, but I'd like to read that it's been suggested that one way to read Proverbs is sequentially, with an attempt to grasp the ideas that unite them all. Another valid approach is to dip into them at random, reading a few at a time, and thinking about the ones with striking ideas, metaphors, or imagery. In other words, this mental picture that's going to help you get through things. Not all sayings will speak to every reader. So what I'm going to lend to you today, clearly, is not something that may affect you as specifically as it does me. You have to understand that my my form of wisdom may not be as great as yours. You may not, you might have greater understanding and because of where you are in your life. And this is what's so neat about this. They say the book is one for young people, but I would suggest to you that it's for all those who are young at heart and somebody like me in between who needs wisdom. We all need wisdom. We all have to make these decisions. And I can tell you, it is a form of protection. It is that defense. It is that shelter. And that's what we're trying to seek here. But everyone should find many sayings and poems that pack insight and good sense into brief and memorable form. And that's the definition of a proverb. It's that it's brief usually. Not always, but it's usually brief. It's specific. It creates imagery. For an example, if you were to look in a dictionary, you might see proverb, the definition of proverb being something such as a stitch in time saves nine. Pennzoil might lend its thought to pay me now or pay me later. My dad's was, son, you take care of the pennies and the dollars will take care of themselves. I can just see him saying it. Mine, I have a couple. One of them's come back to bite me in a way, but I have a couple. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. Okay? The second one, which my wife throws at me occasionally, is I have always said fun is overrated. Okay? When you really look at it, fun is overrated. Look into Ecclesiastes 7 again in verses 1 through 4 where it talks about, this is hard to accept, but it talks about being in a house of mourning rather than the house of myrrh or feasting. And I will tell her, well, you know what? This would be fun to do. Occasionally I'll say something like that and she'll say, Jim, fun is overrated. So I've had it come back on me, but I would suggest to you, you know, all things break down, I guess, but really what I'm trying to say, and I think what Proverbs would say here is just to suggest to you that you have to have some perspective, and you don't want to do something just at the expense of others or the expense or compromise of your, more importantly, your Christianity, your relationship with Jesus Christ and the great God eternal. Those you never want to jeopardize or put into a place of compromise. So, let's begin at the beginning. Let's turn to Proverbs. And begin with verse 1. Now, again, of chapter 1. And we're going to go through these. I've picked out a little something that has struck me in each one of the chapters. Again, you may be able... You guys want... Does anyone have a proverb they want to share with me? Do you have one that you remember? We were talking about one. Mr. Velasquez and Mr. Hawkins and I were talking about one just before services, about, and it was in 22:6, I believe, where it talks about train up a child. We know that. You kids hear it all the time, don't you? Hey, I'm doing this for you. I'm trying to train you. This is something you can carry on as you get older. You're going to remember this when you're old, folks. You know what? I remember, too, with my dad and mother, and particularly as a teenager, son, you can't do this. You don't want to do that. No, I'm not going to let you do this. Oh, come on. You know what? When I get married, I'm not going to do it that way. I have kids. Nah, I'm not going to make them do it that way. And I have to tell you, every time, not every time maybe, but often as a parent, I had to look back and see what mom and dad did. That was my point of reference. This book is truly your point of reference. So it behooves every one of us to learn. And you know what's neat about this book? Even if your parents aren't around, you got the book. Okay? Use it. It will take you places you really want to go. And that's important to remember. Proverbs. Let's just get to verse 2 here. For learning wisdom and discipline, this is what Proverbs are. For understanding words of discernment, for acquiring the discipline for success, righteousness, justice and equity. And again, remember, I'm reading from the Jewish Study Bible, so it may not sound like yours, okay? Same meat. But it seems to lend itself to some unusual or neat ways of putting things for me, anyways. This is the one for me. For endowing the simple with shrewdness. In other words, when you don't really have it all and you don't understand it all, this book is to endow you with the shrewdness that you need as a as a person growing up, as an adult, as someone, again, as a Christian. And remember, he's writing this from a human point of view. This isn't just, he's talking about how he feels. He's talking about what makes him tick. It's like what makes him bleed. You and I know that our relationship with Jesus Christ and the great eternal Father is one that comes from our humanity. We can't help that. And it comes from that which we've experienced and what influences us. And this book should be of great influence. The young with knowledge, it endows those young with knowledge and foresight. The wise man hearing them will gain more wisdom. So in other words, it's not just for the young, right? It's for the wise man who realizes he ain't got it all, okay? He doesn't have it all, and he says, I can gain from this. The discerning man will learn to be adroit. Now, I had to look that word up, too. Boy, Jim, this is one thing about this book's helped me. You know, I get to the dictionary and look up all these words. You guys probably know it, but I didn't know. It means to be ingenious. It means to be one who is professional, to perfect, to understand in a ingenious way. So the discerning man learns how to put things, you might say. Remember when Solomon was dealing with the two mothers and he suggested that they split the baby in half and he could see then suddenly who really was the mother when she said, don't do it, don't do it. You see, he was this discerning man who had, through his ability, had learned and understood human nature. And even further, that which we need to achieve our relationship and take it to a higher level with our Father. For understanding a proverb or an epigram, and an epigram can be something that's humorous, short, usually, and it oftentimes will express something in a terse way. It's supposed to be humorous, but it kind of bites you a little so that you kind of understand it. And as I was reading some of this, I noticed some things were biting me. And I didn't find them all that funny, but they're supposed to be funny as well. So we will find some of those that I think we can consider humorous. Finally, in 7a, it says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Now, this isn't this cowering in the corner, really. What it's talking about is developing understanding, wisdom, to develop a conscience that makes you aware, that allows you to discern right from wrong. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of this. We're going to read a scripture here in a while. I don't know if we'll get to it today. I don't remember that. But that gets us to a point of telling us that we need to acquire knowledge before we'll use it, before we really understand totally our situation. We're attempting to take in this wisdom. It's a little confusing, but I find it fascinating that it's, again, this ongoing process that we need, that will take us where we need to go. Chapter 2, my son, in verse 1, if you accept my words, remember again, you've got to do something. You have to accept these words and treasure up my commandments. Treasure up my commandments. Again, needing to know and understand what those are. So oftentimes you hear they encumber someone. They're the law. They're too legalistic. They don't allow you to live your life. But the fact of the matter is if you understand the commandments and you utilize what is being said and described there, they are absolute freedom. Just like the Sabbath. Occasionally people will tell you, oh, the Sabbath, you're in bondage if you keep the Sabbath. I suggest to you that it is a point of freedom. And I know you believe that. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here today. Goes on to say in verse 2, if you make your ear attentive to wisdom and your mind open to discernment, if you call to understanding and cry aloud to discernment, if you seek it as you do silver, in other words, if you're pursuing wisdom, if you're pursuing the right way of life as much as you do money and search for it as treasures, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and attain knowledge of God. When you get to that point, when you set all those other things aside, that's when you start to achieve this form of wisdom. It is a path to wisdom, is what it amounts to. It's a path. Proverbs 3, verses 13 through 18. This is a praise of wisdom. Sometimes it's hard for us to understand wisdom or being wise, or are we indeed wise? And there is a point of humility there, and I understand that. But this is a praise of wisdom in verses 13 through 18, where it says, "Happy is the man who finds wisdom, the man who attains understanding. Her value in trade is better than silver." And again, the Proverbs, as in their majority form, are written as though they're a lady. They're feminine. It talks about her. And it says here, "She is more precious than rubies." Where are we? "Her value is better, is better than silver. Her yield greater than gold. She is more precious than rubies. All of your goods cannot equal her. In her right hand is the length of days." In her left, riches and honor. Her ways are pleasant ways, and all her paths peaceful. She is a tree of life to those who grasp her. Whoever holds on to her is happy. Now, we know that our life isn't always yippee sticks. We understand that. But you got to know, I'm sure you can agree, that achieving wisdom and understanding where you are in your life and what it means can save you a great deal of grief. There's no doubt about it. And this is what it's praising and causing us to try to understand what it is we need to know. Chapter 4, 7 through 9. This is an interesting way of putting it to me. Chapter 7 says the beginning of wisdom is what? What's the beginning of wisdom? It says to acquire wisdom. Again, you got to go out there. Just like all of us have been in school at one time or another. All of us have received some form of education. And we know that going and doing whatever we need to do to understand and to be educated is to acquire that education, to understand, to acquire that understanding. And what it says is, again, that you've got to go out, you've got to acquire this wisdom. "With all your acquisitions, acquire discernment." "Hug her to you, and she will exalt you." In other words, you've got to embrace this wisdom. "She will adorn your head with a graceful wreath, crown you with a glorious diadem." In other words, it's like wearing a crown. It's like having something that you possess that has validity in your life. Wisdom is in here. You know, my dad used to always talk about the importance of education. And he used to say to me, "Son, remember this, education can't be taken away from you." And I hear Karen, she will come home from class and she will tell me about how she's dealing with students. And she always tries to encourage them, obviously, to get some form of education, whether it be vocational or go on to college, whatever they feel is important in their life. She will encourage them, at least on the physical aspects of it, to get this education. Why? She will say, because they can't take it away from you. Regardless of what you do, they can't take it away. This wisdom, they cannot, by they, I mean fellow human beings, if you have the understanding, you are so much better off. Because I can look at my life and know when I was a bit short of those points of wisdom. Didn't always do it the right way. God's been merciful to me and led me places that I didn't even know I was going. But this book, this point of Proverbs, will take you places that you need to be. Best guide for success, the Bible. It says in verses 1 through 9 in chapter 4, it describes a concept of loving wisdom, hating evil. Verse 7 in particular states the first step in attaining wisdom is to acquire, to absorb the teaching of wisdom, to hear and assimilate them. Even before one can properly understand and apply them. I guess we got there quicker than I thought. In other words, I was talking about this particular verse in chapter 4. Again, it says that The first step is attaining wisdom is to acquire or absorb the teachings of wisdom, to hear it and assimilate them even before one can properly understand and apply them. In other words, we're going to be learning things sometimes, and that's the same thing at school. Why would I ever use algebra? Why are you taking me? Why are you forcing me to try to understand all of this stuff? Why would I do that? I don't need it. Well, you know what? You may. And that's what that's saying here. You're going to acquire this before you may even realize what you need. You know, I couldn't help but think maybe another one of my little proverbs. You must learn to walk before you can run. In other words, you've got to stand before you can walk. And that's what these scriptures are lending their points of wisdom to me. They're telling me I need to go and grow up, do these things that I need to do in order that I might achieve wisdom, that I might cope, that I might deal with life in a better way. Chapter 20, or verse 20. You thought I jumped ahead. Boy, I was going to finish early, wasn't I? It says in verse 20 of the same chapter 4, "My son, listen to my speech. Incline your ear to my words. Do not let lose sight of them. Keep them in your mind. They are life to him who finds them, healing for the whole body. More than all that you guard, guard your mind. Protect your mind, for it is the source of what? It's the source of life. Again, that which is in your mind cannot be taken away from you. No matter what you guard in your life, protect your mind. That's why it's so important in this world that has so much out there that's so ugly and so profane, that we don't get involved in it, that we take ourselves away from it. Because we must protect our mind. Chapter 5, let's look at verses 1 through 4. Now, chapter 5 is a chapter which describes fidelity. My notes over here, that's kind of cute, the notes in the book, begin with, stick to your own wife. That's what it says, stick to your own wife. And of course, ladies, stick to your own hubby. These are things that are important. It says, "My son, listen to my wisdom, incline your ear to my insight, that you may have foresight. While your lips hold fast to knowledge. For the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, her mouth is smoother than oil, but in the end she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as any two-edged sword." We know where this all leads. I understand. But it is a point of view. Stick to your own mate. It's important. Chapter 6, verses 6 through 10. And here is an epigram. Okay, remember we talked about it's usually short, and it usually can be terse, but it's supposed to be humorous. 6 through 10 of chapter 6. "Lazy bones, go to the ant. Study its ways and learn. Without leaders, officers, or rulers, it lays up its store during the summer, gathers in food for the harvest. How long will you lie there, lazy bones? When will you wake up from your sleep? A bit more sleep, a bit more slumber, a bit more hugging yourself in bed." Verses 6 through 10. I thought that interesting. I thought it was quite a way of saying, look, you're just hanging around, you're not doing anything. You're saying, oh, just a little while longer. We've all been there when the alarm goes off and we don't want to get out. We don't want to do the things that sometimes we need to do. Well, it's just saying that if this is constant, if it's something that causes you not to achieve the things that you need to do, then maybe it ought to change. Lazy bones is how it's put. I thought that interesting as well. Now again, chapter 7, and you will see some redundancy in the Proverbs. They're repetitive in nature, and there's a reason for that. Just like the Sabbath is every seventh day. Just like the annual days come every year. There are reasons for the annual holy days. There are reasons for the weekly Sabbath. And it says in verses 1 through 4, and it talks about, again, being aware. Warning again of the seduction of an illicit relationship. It says, "My son, heed my words and store up my commandments with you." In other words, you've got to have this wisdom. You've got to understand these commandments. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Keep my commandments alive and my teachings as the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the tablet of your mind. In other words, they got to be in here. If you're like me, that's difficult at times. I got a kick out of my son talking about the hymnals. And he asked, does anyone have them memorized? And I raised my hand, but that was being facetious. My family can tell you I cannot remember the words to any song. But I'm good at medleys. I make them up as we go. So I understand. But what it's saying here is you've got to take some time, educate yourself. It's as though there's this writing pad in here. It's something that you can see within your mind's eye that tells you what's right from what's wrong. And that's what's being said here. Say to wisdom, you are my sister, in verse 4, and call understanding a kinswoman, because she will guard you against that which is forbidden. Let's go to chapter 8. Again, this is my book report. These are proverbs that somewhat leap out at me and give me some point of reference to create wisdom within my view. I suggest that again, they may be different, but they are something that we can use. And if I could be allowed, be so bold as to make or suggest a homework assignment, that would be, if you haven't read the book of Proverbs recently, if you're like me, you probably do. Let me tell you how this happened. I failed to tell you. I have a friend that occasionally comes by. Julie says I have too much time on my hands. But anyways, this friend comes by. And he comes by about once a month and visits me and talks about world situations and the community and so on, and talks about scripture and all of these things. He's a Jehovah Witness. And I regard him as a friend. He's challenging. I enjoy him. We share this time together. He usually has someone with him. And he was asking me about my wife because he knows she's a teacher. He says, how's Karen doing? I said, she's doing real well. He said, what's it like in this society to be a teacher? Well, obviously, I don't really know, but he was asking me how she coped with her students and with parents and society and all those things that have changed, and it's not like it used to be. There isn't the discipline and all of this. And we were talking about this, and his sidekick turned to Proverbs 22:6 and talked about train up a child in the way in which they should go. We've already talked about it. Well, after they left, I decided to go back and look up the scripture. And I started reading all that was around it, in other words. That's what I've tried to do a little more. Obviously, when we stand up here, we will cite specific scriptures. But in order to get the whole flavor, to understand what we need to do at times, we need to read around it. And that's what I started to do. And it caused me to think that I hadn't looked at the book of Proverbs for quite a while. And I hadn't looked at it maybe as in-depth as I should. Because I certainly do now have to embrace the idea that indeed it is a book of success. It is if it's applied. In verse 8, or chapter 8, verses 12 through 14, it talks about, I, wisdom, live with what? I live with prudence. I attain knowledge and foresight. To fear the Lord is to hate evil. I hate pride, arrogance, the evil way, duplicity in speech. In other words, someone who's not telling you the truth, who's talking out of both sides of their mouth. We've all seen situations such as that. Mine are counsel. This is wisdom. Mine are counsel, resourcefulness. I am understanding. Courage is mine. Courage comes from knowing. Courage comes from understanding. Courage comes from not being confused about what the world's delivering to us. It allows us to see what we need to see. I hope I'm not being too redundant about all of that, but it certainly is true. Chapter 9, verse 10. Beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. Again, developing the understanding, the wisdom, the conscience. Ever been in a situation? Have you ever been somewhere that you really didn't intend when you went? I mean, I recall one time in particular where someone had invited me to their home. And I went to their home and suddenly there were things going on there. I knew I shouldn't be there. Now, peer pressure is difficult at times. Fortunately for me, fear overtook me. I knew what they were doing wasn't legal, and I just didn't want to be there. But it was because I had some knowledge of the law, you might say, and of what was going on. And I knew that was not a place I wanted to be. That's what wisdom brings to you, and particularly as a Christian. And we who need to address, who want to serve, who are part of the harvest crew, who realize that it is our reasonable service to serve Him. That's where wisdom comes in. We've got to know what we need to know. And the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. In other words, if you understand God, and now none of us do that. We can't. It's not possible fully. It's though we're seeing through that glass dimly. But it is saying that the knowledge of the Holy One, that knowledge that we can obtain, is true understanding. Proverbs 10, 27 and 28. Again, the fear of the Lord prolongs life, while the years of the wicked will be shortened. The righteous can look forward to joy. You know, no matter what you're going through now, you can look forward to eternity. You can take it past this physical problem that you have and the things that you're dealing with and realize that there is that other world. In other words, there is eternal salvation for us. But the hope of the wicked is doomed. You know, when you think about this in a physical manner, when it talks about the fear of the Lord prolongs life, I cannot help about looking at it just in a physical way. Sure, there are those spiritual applications. But for an example, talking about the eating laws and talking about clean and unclean meats in that way and looking at how it keeps you from those things that you probably ought not to be doing, it's interesting to me. I have watched a nutritionist of late who suggests, and he's a Protestant, he doesn't adhere to clean and unclean meats for spiritual reasons, but he knows that eating that lobster is not clean. He knows that it can cause his system some problems. He didn't actually go in detail, but there was someone on that particular show suggesting that those people who eat pork, those states where there is a greater pork consumption, have a greater rate of cancer as well. I can't prove it. I'm not suggesting that. But what I am suggesting to you is that physical application can prolong life. It may not be all that important physically, but then when you can transfer it to the spiritual aspects of your life and understanding God's law, then there is real relevancy. Let's go to chapter 11. In 29, it says, "He who makes trouble for his household shall inherit the wind. A fool is a slave to the wise-hearted. The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life. A wise man captivates people. If the righteous on earth get their deserts," if the righteous on earth get what they deserve, how much more the wicked man and the sinner? Have you ever thought about it that way? Have you ever thought about if the righteous man gets what he deserves, think about the wailing and gnashing of teeth. Again, sometimes we don't look far enough, but if we look at this and we accept those scriptures, we understand that their deserts are really tough. We don't want to be there. I have to laugh at he who makes trouble for his household shall inherit the wind. In other words, he loses his inheritance. He doesn't get anything. He's just out there grasping for something that isn't really there. Well, when you think about that, and you think about it again in the spiritual plane, what it's saying is, if we violate the law, if we cause trouble for the household of our father, then we cannot inherit what's rightfully ours. In other words, if we lack wisdom, if we don't understand what we need to do, we can have problems. Now, you may interpret that in a different way, but that's what I see as being important for me to understand, that there is necessity here for me to be doing something. Proverbs 12:19 states, truthful speech abides forever. In other words, if you tell someone the truth, it withstands the test of time. A lying tongue, but for a moment. It's shallow. It doesn't have the foundation. Chapter 13, verses 2 and 3. A man enjoys good from the fruit of his spirit, from the fruit of his speech. But out of the throat of the treacherous comes lawlessness. He who guards his tongue preserves his life. He who opens wide his lips, it is ruin. It's his ruin. In other words, again, being being concerned about what you say. It's not the right word. I can't think of it all the same. It's tough to get old. But being aware of what you're saying, knowing that you are accountable, and if you say the wrong things, it could lead to your own ruin. Again, remember who you're representing as a Christian. Verse 20, he who keeps company with wise becomes wise. Remember when your mom or dad, you'd say, I want to go over and visit so-and-so, and they were a little leery, they didn't necessarily want you going there, they knew that it probably wouldn't be best for you. But they were okay with somebody else, some other friend. Well, here it clearly says, rub elbows with the wise. It rubs off. But he who consorts with dullards comes to grief. There again, reminding us who and what we are. Proverbs 14:26 and 27. The fear of the Lord is a stronghold, a refuge for a man's child. Again, here's some responsibility as a parent. Some responsibility for anyone that creates this safe haven. Because it is to be a refuge for a man's children. For the fear of the Lord, this conscience, this awareness, this wisdom is a fountain of life, enabling one to avoid deadly snares. Self-explanatory, but it certainly gives us some point of view here. And so much of it seems as though it's continually warning us of where and how we are to be and the responsibilities that we have. Chapter 15 and verse 3, I chose this because it was kind of interesting to me. At least in the margin, it addresses that this is talking about a geographical omniscience of God. In other words, that He's everywhere. Well, you may or may not agree in the sense that geographically is everywhere, but this is what they were saying. I put it out there. It's a point of developing wisdom. What do you think? When it says here, the eyes of the Lord are everywhere, observing the bad and the good. Something we can ponder this next week. Chapter 16, verse 22, lends itself to saying, good sense is a fountain of life to those who have it. Common sense, good sense, is a fountain of life. And the folly is the punishment of fools. Proverbs 17, verse 14. This is one that I think we all need to remember at times. I know I've done it. It says, to start a quarrel is to open up a slice, S-L-U-I-C-E. I looked that up too, and it's to open up the floodgates. It's to cause you more grief than you want to deal with. Well, we've all done that, haven't we? We've instigated problems. I remember particularly growing up with my cousins, we were always poking at each other and causing things to happen. And it says, really, you're really starting some real problems here. But take it to the adult level and understand that these are things that we shouldn't be involved with as well. Before a dispute flares up, drop it. Boy, that's easier said than done, isn't it? You're in there. Hey, what do you mean? Oh, I'm going to back away from this. But it is a point of wisdom. Back away. Proverbs 18:15. Again, can't take it away if you have wisdom. It says here, the mind of an intelligent man acquires knowledge. The ears of the wise seek out knowledge. Again, the wise, consort with the wise, be with those people who know. But that requires you to have an elementary form of wisdom, doesn't it? It requires you to understand things to an extent so that you know what is correct. And again, it says that that intelligent man will acquire that knowledge. I think I'll stop here. But I want to read to you, in closing, a scripture that we can find in 1 Corinthians. First Corinthians 2, verses 5 through 8. It's interesting what Paul relates to the Corinthians there at Corinth, where he says from the New King James Version, to not be in the power of wisdom, the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. However, we speak wisdom among those who are mature, yet not the wisdom of this age, nor of the rulers of this age, who are coming to nothing. But we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, the hidden mystery, the hidden wisdom, which God ordained before the ages for our glory, which none of the rulers of this age knew. For had they known, they wouldn't have crucified the Lord of glory. That's our responsibility. Never to put ourselves in that point of driving that nail, even though we understand that we have through our sins. Let wisdom, the wisdom of God, set us free from all those things that can haunt us.